Thorny, as we venture into the R&R, two truths are consistent. We love our dear Montana state, and we love great beer. And you know who else feels the same? Jeremiah Johnson Brewing. Brewed in the heart of Montana in downtown Great Falls, Jeremiah Johnson takes Montana's finest ingredients to craft some of Montana's favorite beers. And now, Jeremiah Johnson's second tap room is open in downtown Coeur d'Alene. Their Citra IPA is probably one of my favorites, but we all know, Thorny, you're not the hop lover I am. You're more of a mountain man Scotch ale.
Well, Foley, I'm certainly not a mountain man, but you are right. I do love their mountain man Scotch ale. But come game day, you and I are both cracking their Golden Bobcat Pale Ale. So when you're looking for a quality craft beer brewed with Montana roots, a relaxing tap room, or just a six-pack to take to your favorite Bobcat tailgate, Jeremiah Johnson delivers. Make your next beer a Jeremiah Johnson, and as always, go Cats.
You know, be patient and enjoy it, because now I'm looking back and I wish I could, you know, go back out there one last time. So just a great experience and just to take it all in.
Well, that's definitely good advice, even for anyone who's not a student athlete at any university, and just, you know, take it all in, because college comes around once and then all of a sudden you're in your late 30s doing a podcast about college football.
Oh, no kidding.
Not naming any names or anybody here. So.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy. Welcome back, Bobcat fans. Well, we are happy to have you back on the podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Jeremiah Johnson Brewing in downtown Great Falls and Coeur d'Alene. They're rolling out the hazy IPAs in the summer, brewed with organic pineapple. Get you some of that. Thorny, how are you doing tonight, buddy?
You know, Foley, I'm doing great. It is Wednesday. I am leaving for Montana on Friday for a much-needed week-long vacation. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. Say hi to Montana for me, will you?
I will. I will do my best. Not making it over to Great Falls, though. Just Missoula.
Yeah. I will stock up on some of that JJ brew, bring it back to my house on the way back. We'll call it good, all right?
Deal.
All right. This episode, we're highlighting our interview with Kevin Cassis. We recently talked to him. Kevin was, if you didn't know, he was a Montana State receiver for the last 4 years. He just recently exited the program. So he's got some insight that some of the other interviews maybe haven't had. And so that's pretty cool. We're going to talk to him about his time at MSU, of course, and then his time trying to, you know, get involved with the NFL and how COVID really just kind of screwed that up. And so it was a great interview. We thank Kevin. He's an awesome guy. Very generous with his time. And he's just a hard worker, some guy I really respected in the last 4 years.
No, he's a great ambassador for the program, just a great guy. He was really fun to have on, and one can't help but wonder what his career may have been like with the more prolific passing game, but he still ended up on the record books, and he still had a stellar career. So without waiting anymore, let's just go ahead and get into the interview with ex-wide receiver, Kevin Cassis.
Right now, we welcome in Kevin Cassis, former Montana State wide receiver. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Doing really good. Thanks.
Yeah, we're doing pretty good. It's just a nice hot day over here. How's it down there in California? How's the weather?
Oh, it's brutal. It's a nice 70 degrees. Just got off the golf course, so can't complain down here.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's like 90 degrees up here, and it's humid. It's a good time.
Oh, yeah. We're going to hit 102 tomorrow. It's going to be awesome.
I didn't realize it got that hot up there.
Yeah. For about a week every year, we get this about right this time. It's very predictable. So
that's yeah. Great. Yeah. I'm from NorCal, so it would, the summers would get pretty hot. So, but I'm down in Southern California now, so it's a little cooler.
7 degrees all year long, right?
Yeah, I can't complain.
There you go.
All right. Well, Kevin Cassis, like Foley said, was a wide receiver for the Bobcats from 2016 to 2019. He really started getting some playing time a little 2016-17, but in 2018, he was named team captain. And in 2019, he finished third team All Big Sky, second year being the team captain. And he finished his career with 152 receptions for 1,956 yards and 11 touchdowns. And unfortunately, I couldn't find the all-time stats. I know some of these stats landed on the all-time list. I believe the 1,956 yards may have been fifth all-time in yards, but I am not sure on that. But he had a great career at Montana State, and we are just thrilled to have him on the show. Thanks again, Kevin, for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Kevin, we'll just get right into it. Most recently, you declared for the 20 NFL draft. So what's kind of been since then? The question would be, like, what your experience at the NFL?
Yeah, it has been a crazy time. Basically started training, when was it? In February. I think we got about 8 weeks, I want to say, until the whole COVID thing kind of started to pop up. And before you know it, they were canceled our pro day, and things were kind of, I guess, they're still going right now, so unsure and stuff. But we were able to film some stuff and try to get that sent out, and the draft day came, and obviously didn't hear my name or didn't hear anything after the draft, but it was a cool experience. I was hearing from teams and stuff, and it's kind of unfortunate the whole COVID thing kind of happened. It would have been nice to have a pro day and get to be able to see, or for teams to be able to see me in person, which would have been nice. But for right now, I'm kind of just staying in shape and still hearing from teams and stuff. And it's so weird that the NFL really hasn't, like, I don't really know. It seems like they're pretty unorganized and they're still pretty unsure of what's going to happen this year. So just staying ready and see what happens. And if not, it's all good. It was it was a cool experience training, but.
Yeah, I think the that definitely hurt a lot of the FCS players or, lower level players' draft stocks because they didn't have the pro days. They couldn't get in front of scouts like they would in other years. And I think there was kind of a record low FCS players drafted this year. I think there was only like six or seven, like single digits, which is pretty low for the division. That's in the teens. So, kind of all around, I certainly think that you definitely had some of the intent to at least get a look from active. So, it would have been really cool to see you get on there. But, are you going to pursue any other opportunities maybe besides the NFL, any other professional football leagues?
I definitely would. I'd go up to Canada for sure, but I think they're kind of in the same boat of being unsure if they're going to have a season and what's going to happen up there. But, I'd love to keep playing some way, somehow. But, with so much uncertainty, it's not looking too good right now. But, we'll see what happens.
Was that one of your goals through college to go to the NFL, or did that come up later on in like your playing career?
Yeah, I think we all, growing up, that's always your dream and that's your goal. And then, you get to high school and, at one point I'm 5'5", 130 pounds. And I was just, I just wanted to make the team and be able to get some playing time. And then somehow I got to Montana State, and after those first couple of years, I was just, I just wanted to get on the field and help somehow. And then, my junior year was pretty good. And then, teams started to come by and they were asking about me. And then my senior year, I did some good things. And, I think that's kind of when I was like, okay, this could potentially, could happen. Maybe I'll get a shot somewhere. And, it was looking pretty good. We were pretty hopeful and stuff. And then the whole COVID thing kind of hit. And, it's unfortunate not only for myself, but even for guys like Braden Conkle and Mitch Broad. And, even like a guy like Logan Jones, who, I think they would have, because I trained with Logan and Mitch during the whole pro day thing. And I think we were supposed to have like 20 plus teams that were coming by. I think a lot of that due to, Sterk bringing a lot of attention.
Sure.
But yeah, I think there were some guys are going to put up some good numbers and stuff. And I think it would have really helped us. And, so that was always something that, I always wanted to do, but definitely thought it was more realistic, in my junior and senior year.
So, Kevin, why don't you tell us a little bit about your recruiting story and how you even ended up in Bozeman in the first place?
Yeah. How did this start? So, it was actually, when I got recruited, it didn't have the signing day or something in like November now.
Correct.
Yeah. A couple guys signed and stuff. So, ours was just like the February, and it was like early January. I wasn't hearing anything from any schools. A couple walk-on things where I could have maybe gone to, some like an FBS school and walked on, but I was kind of, I didn't want to go be a punching bag, especially I was not the biggest guy. Still aren't. I'm still not, but.
Oh, come on. I was actually kind of looking at randomly that your recruiting picture came up from when you were like a freshman.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different in the muscle department. Don't kid yourself here.
Yeah. No, definitely. I was definitely a little smaller back then. it was tough to get recruited and stuff. And, you know, I was, it's funny. I was like pretty set on actually not playing, and because I was still wasn't hearing anything. And, you know, I even thought about probably, there were some JUCOs and stuff, close by that I probably would end up doing that because I still wanted to play, but, a part of me felt that I could, if I got an opportunity somewhere. And I think I was, when was it? So I was just driving back after school or something, and I got a 406 area call from Matt Miller. And, honestly, the funny thing is I couldn't remember his name when he said his name. So I was like, oh shoot. Like, so in my phone contact, it was like MSU football or something. And it was, I think it's still bad for Matt in my phone, but, but yeah, he was, Matt's like, now he's like an older brother to me. And, it was weird. Some connection from my high school, someone, cause he was at Boise State, and then he went to obviously Montana State. Someone knew him at Boise who went to my high school a while back, and he was, you know, putting a good word in for me. And so Matt, you know, it seemed to have, like, it was weird. I was like, actually sounded like he was like really interested in stuff. And they got me on up there anywhere.
Not the recruiting time to be up.
Yeah, exactly. So I busted out my, you know, the biggest shoes or the ones with the biggest sole that made me look the tallest, and went up there, and and it was weird. It was like, obviously being out of state, you know, it's not cheap to go there, because I was kind of in that last wave. I was like, I'm probably not getting a scholarship or anything, but it was just weird. It was like the area just felt right. And honestly, what really made me want to commit there and go there was just the coaching staff. I felt like all of them, it was just like, I felt like there was like, it was just a good fit. And then I, you know, flew back, and I got maybe like the smallest partial scholarship they could edge out for me. And I just said, you know, I guess I'll go try and see what happens for a year. And if I can earn a scholarship, you know, obviously I'll stay and stuff. And, flew back. And as soon as I got off the plane, I called Matt and told them I wanted to go there. And I was, that's when I became a Bobcat. And, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, being in California, after that, you know, people are like, what's a Montana State? Like, what's, you guys have electricity up there and stuff. So I had to deal with that for a little bit. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got recruited. And, ever since then, you know, it's like one of the best decisions I've made. You know, something that I'm kind of glad I didn't, you know, get any interest from other schools.
I legit had a pen pal in like fifth grade who could not comprehend how his letter got there so fast, because he thought we still used the Pony Express.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I got some of those too. And they're like, you guys even like, what, you guys have mail up there? You guys have like horses and stuff? And I'm like,
honestly, it's a fun thing not to correct people at. Just like, yeah, whatever. Sure.
No, I think it's better than the less people know about it there, because it's such a cool
exactly,
spot up there.
Exactly.
You know, it's like.
So when you were up here on your recruiting trip, I read that Mitch Herbert was your host. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Did he have any sort of hints on you signing here? He was a pretty good receiver.
Yeah. It's like the people, like, I think who was on my visit with me? Actually, no, I was with Kyle Finch, and so we were with Mitch and stuff. I can't remember who hosted him, but it was just like the people, like Mitch is a good, great guy. Was someone that I kind of felt like we'd get along, like the people that I met along the trip with other players. Just seemed like there were some like solid guys who not only cared about football and stuff, but you know, obviously Mitch. This, I mean, the first guy you meet is Mitch, and he's going to be a, you know, going to med school at Columbia. He's a pretty smart guy, so maybe he, you know, you talk to him, you're like, oh, people must be pretty smart around here. but no, yeah, Mitch is great, and he was someone that I definitely looked up to in my time there.
So you were part of the first class that Choate brought in. And so you walked into a locker room full of the Ash regime leftovers. How did they accept you?
Yeah, that's right. I was some guys from from Ash or whatnot, but
like Mitch Herbert.
yeah, that's right. So that was interesting. There was definitely some people that were unhappy. You know, I feel like you always get that with Dodge turn stuff. I didn't even realize, you know, work out. I was the guys, they just had show first day of fall camp. So I didn't really get to like bond with anyone going into like training or like the fall camp, training camp stuff. But you know, there were a lot of good guys, and the guys that stuck around from Ash, were just quality, you know, players that, because I mean, that accepted Choate and believed in him. And, you know, Choate's I can't go on and say enough good things about him and how he was able to, you know, create a culture, and especially for those guys that were there before. Cause I could totally see how it could, you know, that would kind of suck if you got recruited by, you know, other coaches and stuff, and all of a sudden they're gone. Like I could see how that could, you know, create some drama and stuff, but you know, kudos to Choate, and you know, he knew how to handle it. And a lot of, you know, some guys left, but the guys who stuck around were great, and you know, still talk to those guys. And you know, they were, you know, a big part of what we were able to do last year with how the culture and stuff was able to change.
Did you kind of buy into Choate's philosophy kind of right from the get-go, or did that something that took a little bit?
Yeah, no, I was in right away. I was kind of, you know, I was one of those guys where, you know, it didn't say too much, kind of just kept my head down, and, you know, whatever Coach Choate said, you know, I was going to do. And, you know, I was especially coming in there when I wasn't even there for like the summer training and stuff. And I just didn't want to mess up, and I didn't want them to, you know, regret wasting the small scholarship that they were able to give me. So I was like, I bought into Choate, and you know, he was definitely a reason why I took a leap of faith and went up there.
How did you kind of see the culture kind of just change, even from that first fall camp to the end of the season, just the first year under Choate? How do you think that, like, the culture has kind of progressed or changed?
Yeah, I think it just started with, you know, it's one of those things. You want it to go, but you want, you know, to rebuild and be able to, you know, change a team and a culture instantaneously. But, you know, unfortunately, that stuff takes time. And it wasn't that there was bad guys who were there when I got there. It was just, you know, maybe they weren't the right fit. And once we got guys in there that everyone was bought into what Coach Choate was saying and believed in, you know, what he stood for and wanted this team to stand for. You know, that's when you kind of started to see things, you know, come full circle. And, you know, that first year I was there was rough. We were super talented, but it just goes to show, if you don't have guys that, you know, are bought into, you know, for one another and, you know, truly being a team, it's, you know, stuff doesn't really work out. And, we saw that my first year, and then it kind of was such a slow progression until really, you know, towards the end of my junior year when we, you know, went up to NDSU, and you could just tell that, like, you know, my senior year that we had, you know, a really good senior class, and and things were going to be pretty good that last year. So, but yeah, it all started with Coach Cho and what he preached and stuff. And yeah, he's the man.
A quick question. I know we've always got another question for you here, but I'm curious, like, I assume that you did end up getting a scholarship, right?
Yeah, I did. After my first semester, you know, they put me on scholarship, which was pretty cool for me, being that I didn't really have any offers or scholarships going in. So yeah, they put me on quick. That's what I also too. It's like Coach Schultz, a guy, he doesn't care if you're a guy who can go out there and play and, produce, he's going to reward you for it. And, something that he'd always say was, in the short run, you don't get what you get, but in the long run, you get what you deserve. So he stood by that, and I was pumped, and he, put me on scholarship.
I use that same line in my class all the time. I totally stole it from Coach Chode.
Oh, I love that. Yeah,
it's a good one.
That's awesome. Yeah, oh, yeah.
For sure.
It's true.
I even say it to my 5-year-old son or my 6-year-old boy now. So he's like, looks at me like, what do you mean, Dad? But that's here nor there. Kevin, I do have a question. Go back to 2016, staying in that year. So you're a young receiver in Montana State. Who are the guys that you bonded with? And maybe who was like a guy that you looked up to on the team?
Yeah, of course, Mitch was one of those guys. Mitch and Wes Wilson. I'm sure you guys know that name.
I've only seen the seemingly party line on the Twitter there.
Yeah, so I think Wes probably bonded with every single guy on the team. He was one of those guys that I don't think there's a single person that he didn't get along with. So Wes was kind of, everyone's going to get along with Wes. So, but he was one of my good buddies. Connor Sullivan was another guy who I got along with pretty well. But yeah, just a lot. There's so many guys I'm sure that I could name, but yeah, there's just a lot of good guys that I was able to, meet and encounter with and get to know and, build relationships with.
So you in high school, and you're from, you went to Oak Ridge High School. Fumbling through my document right there trying to find it. I mean, you were catching touchdown passes from Notre Dame quarterback Ian Book, and then you come over to Montana State, where, let's be honest, you weren't catching as many passes. I mean, how was that transition?
Yeah, I was pretty spoiled in high school. I was very spoiled with the quarterback play, and we had some interesting times during my 4 years there with the whole quarterback situation. But Ian was definitely that's obviously super special quarterback, but it was definitely different going to college and after catching passes from Ian.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into that in a little bit, but
I figured
we're going to have to get there a little bit. But that's just a little teaser. We're going to keep kind of on timeline, I guess. I'm curious though, like kind of going on the philosophy side of things. And this is kind of, I guess, pertinent to the question we just talked a little bit about too. One of the reasons the Cats are so successful offensively is obviously running the ball. And a lot of that hinges on the blocking by the wide receivers. Like how do you get a group of wide receivers just to buy in to maybe do more blocking than maybe what wide receivers used to, or even wants to do?
Yeah, no, totally. it takes time. I mean, it takes a, here's a good example. It's like Coy Steele, he's a guy you're not gonna have to tell to block. If you have guys like Coy Steele, who's going to put their nose in the dirt and, have wounds all over their body and just block their butt off. But it takes a guy who's, bought into the culture and understands, what we're trying to do on offense. And, initially, I think I just wanted to not mess up and get on the field and help any way I can. So I didn't care if we ran the ball 50 times a game, but, you get to that point, you're like, dang, why are we not throwing the ball? But, But then it's like you start putting Troy at running back and you're like, okay, let's keep giving him the ball. And you get Isaiah and you're like, yeah, keep giving those guys the ball. So, and then of course Travis, who you could take, put behind at quarterback and let him run. So, we were just, super talented with the guys that could run with the ball that, you don't mind, blocking a little extra or blocking a little more than probably receivers at Eastern Washington or, Sac State.
So when you were throwing the ball, I mean, you became this guy who we all like start to see you as like the guy who is like so good at catching the ball over your shoulder. Is that something you were just naturally good at, or is that something you worked on?
Yeah, I think it's just something that I think I was catching passes when I was like 4 or 5 years old. So it was just something that, kudos to my dad for, I'm sure his elbow's all jacked up now because he threw me so many freaking passes. So it's just something that, almost was second nature to me where, I played baseball and stuff, so, and played center field. So, catching over my shoulder was something that, I just got really comfortable doing it. And then, this past year, I felt like I had a couple of them. It was just like, maybe more than I did my first couple of years.
That one in the Grizz game, the huge play early on, and then obviously against Austin Peay, you had the one in the corner. I mean, just your senior year, you had so many of them, one in Sac State. I mean, it was almost like it was right in front of Ryan and I. It was a late fourth quarter, but
kidding. Just, that's funny.
Yeah, it was just
the one game we impressed. Attended.
Yeah. Oh, never mind. Yeah, you guys shouldn't have came to that one.
Yeah, we determined we're the bad luck. Guys, that season, only game we attend, we lose.
That's too funny. But yeah, just something that I think I just from a young age, I got thrown so many footballs at me that it was like almost second nature. And I think I just kind of took it for granted that how many passes I saw when I was little and growing up. I mean, I played football with Ian when we were, 10 years old. So we were throwing the ball when we were, honestly, I think we threw the ball more when I was a junior peewee than we did at times at MSU. So I saw quite a few passes growing up.
Nice.
Not a bad way to get acclimated to catching the ball, for sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, a question that we like to ask a lot of former players, who was probably the toughest defender you went up against?
Toughest defender
in the Big Sky. You mean in your college career?
It's just so tough because I would move around so much. I'd be in the slot and I'd be outside, so it's kind of tough to remember. But I went up against him a couple of times. It was was his name Taron Johnson? I want to say from Weber State.
Yeah, I think he's on the. That's pretty close to something like that.
He, I think he was like the Big Sky defensive player. I think he's on the Bills right now, I want to say. But yeah, he was a super good player. I think I was only able to line up against him a couple times because I was that year I was primarily in the slot. But yeah, he was a super good player.
And then I guess on the flip side, maybe a little bit more difficult question. Was there just someone that you lined up against or even a team you lined up against where you just like, I got this?
I think for us offensively, it definitely was not North Dakota State. That's obvious. that one's pretty obvious. That was that was our couple tough games there. But man,
I mean, it sure seemed like maybe from an outsider's perspective, you didn't have a whole lot of problems with the Grizz for a few years there.
Oh yeah. We I think offensively definitely felt that, we just pounded it down their throats. They, those are some pretty fun games. Like, it's even like that, it's like, I don't think we threw a single touchdown pass during one of those games.
Nope.
But we, I think, I don't know who I saw that from on Twitter, but,
I think it was me, actually. I think I posted
was
that.
Was it you?
I posted that like a month or so ago, and it got a decent amount of retweets on it.
Yeah, I saw that. I was like, oh my goodness, no way. But yeah, even like that, it's like, I mean, me and Travis and guys like that were like, dude, just keep, we got to keep running the ball. Like, we're just so effective with guys like, obviously Troy and Isaiah. And it was just weird. Like, they just couldn't stop us. It was like, it was kind of crazy, but
yeah, something like they, like rushing for like 370 yards a game against the Grizz last 4 years or something silly like that, 350, I don't know, somewhere in there.
Yeah, that's just, yeah, it's insane. I mean, and I know, of course,
I know Choate's like philosophy is on that. Like, why would I pass the ball if they can't stop the run?
Yeah, and then that's what you kind of like, even guys who are the receivers, you start to see the change when guys who kind of start to understand the culture, like, yeah, why would we throw the ball when we're averaging like 6 yards a carry? So you're like, whatever, I'll block if we're going to keep getting first downs at ease, running a little zone concept up the middle.
So you were 4-0 against the Grizz. I mean, that's something you could always hang your hat on, Kevin. But do you have a favorite Cat Grizz memory?
Man, I'm thankful that there's plenty of memories from those games, but I mean, it's tough to beat the one my junior year where where they fumbled at the goal line. That's I'm sure the Grizz fans hate to hear about that, but yeah, that's got to be one of the top memories.
Man, you weren't even in on that play, but
that's oh yeah, top no, one. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's infamous. I mean, that's one of the best calls you'll ever hear on sports.
The Bobcats hold. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, that was
absolutely.
That was crazy.
Right on. So one of the questions then thereafter is, I mean, if you look at the progress of Montana State and you start playing in the playoffs, your junior and your senior year, what is playoff football like? Because to Ryan and I, like, it's intoxicating for us to watch Montana State all the time. But when we see the night games, when we see like the Austin Peay game, to me is one of the best games I've ever seen. And so what was it like playing in playoff football?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. Especially, yeah, that night game was unbelievable. And it was, thankfully, it stayed, it was pretty warm for, you know, that time of the year that can obviously get pretty cold. But yeah, that was crazy. And then even though, I mean, we kind of got beat up a little bit at North Dakota State, that's just like, that atmosphere is different. Just such a cool experience that I'm glad, you know, I was able to, you know, go through and stuff, even though definitely was not fun getting our butts kicked. But I think the playoffs are something special, and it's one of those things where it's like, how does like FBS football not have something like this? I mean, how electric and how cool it is for the FCS, but you know, it's just like, I think that's why FCS football is so cool. I mean, you can actually tell you know, who's going to actually be the national champion and stuff. So obviously that's been North Dakota State actually, so it hasn't, it's not too hard to tell, I guess, but.
Unfortunately, no, it's pretty much
them. Yeah.
And NDSU versus second? The field every year.
Yeah. Who gets to that game? So who's in second place? But yeah, I think the playoffs are just so cool. And especially that we got that night game was awesome.
Well, you had such a great catch in the back of the end zone right there from Tucker Rovig. And that was a great call on ESPN2. I mean, I'm sure you've seen that clip, but it's been so fun to watch you guys. And again, both seasons culminated in the losses against NDSU. How close is Montana State to overcoming that? I mean, you're there, you're playing. What is the measuring stick? What's the gap there?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're close. I mean, I think that game, I think we could go back and play. I think we could, I don't know if we beat them, but I think we could have played them tighter. I think there's some things where, you know, there's, of course they got, you know, a potential first round drafted quarterback next year and had some serious weapons, but, You know, I think even the difference from my junior to senior when we played them was we were just like, our junior, we hadn't like, we really didn't understand what the playoffs were all about. We were just like, oh my goodness, we're in the playoffs. Like, how do we even handle this? And, you know, I think for North Dakota State, it helps that they get that bye every year and that they get three home playoff games. So I think that's honestly, that's what it's going to take to beat those guys, I think, is there's got to, you've got to have such a strong, you know, regular season where you're not losing any games and you got to make them get on the road and make them go play in some, you know, cold environments and not in that dome. But I think MSU is close. I think, you know, they're getting one of these days, I think something's going to happen and someone's going to go up there. And I think, you know, hopefully it's MSU that can go up there and beat them.
Well, Kevin, one of the things I really look for in people I root for is leadership. And I'm going to credit Bill Lamberty on this. He helped me out on that, on this stat. You were one of 11 players to ever be elected two-year team captain at Montana State. I don't know if you knew that. But, like, yeah, what does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's just, to me, that was just, that was crazy. It, you know, it's super special. And, you know, not only an honor, but something that I just like, I couldn't even wrap my mind around when, like, my junior year, I got picked as a captain and stuff. And, you know, it's one of those things where I have to credit, you know, my parents and, you know, Coach Cho and guys getting me, even Matt Miller, guys who, you know, gave me confidence to, you know, take more of a leadership role. And I think I've always been a guy who, I'm going to put my nose in the ground and, you know, work hard and be a leader by example. But it kind of, I mean, they kind of helped me take that next step and gave me confidence to, you know, be more vocal and, I guess be a guy that guys could look to and I guess not only for guidance, but, you know, to be somewhat, I guess, motivational and stuff. So yeah, it was so, it, you know, super like what, a, like just an honor to be a team captain those 2 years. And, yeah, it was, you know, special, something that, you know, I'll remember for the rest of my life.
So thinking of younger players, maybe even guys who are coming up through the program now, if you were to give him advice, what would you say to him?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, be patient. You know, for me, I don't know how, but I somehow got on the field my freshman year. I think we were just so, you know, everything was kind of, I wouldn't say unorganized, but, you know, there was opportunities for younger guys to come in and play with the rebuilding process and stuff. But I would just say, be patient, you know, things take time. And especially when you're younger, you know, redshirting is not the worst thing. So obviously I wish, now looking back, I wish I could have, but, you know, be patient and enjoy it, because now I'm looking back and I'm just, I wish I could, you know, go back out there one last time. So just a great experience and just to take it all in.
Well, that's definitely good advice, even for anyone who's not a student athlete at any university, and just, you know, take it all in, because college comes around once and then all of a sudden you're in your late 30s doing a podcast about college football.
Oh, no kidding.
Not naming any names or anybody here. So.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Well, we do have to kind of ask the question that we kind of alluded to earlier. I think now's a good time to kind of get into it. So you had multiple quarterbacks, multiple offensive coordinators. I'm sure all of that was pretty frustrating for you. Just how did you view your role as an MSU football player? Like, what kept you motivated when maybe you weren't getting the targets you had hoped for?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a, you know, that's a great question. I guess looking back at it now, I'm like, what? Like, was I like not mentally okay? Like, you should want the ball and to get passes thrown to you, but, you know, somehow I guess I was able to be okay with, you know, accepting what was kind of going on and stuff. And honestly too, I had so much respect for, you know, a guy, obviously Troy, who, you know, probably, and his, the best thing for him would have been to be a full-time middle linebacker, but for him to come over and play quarterback and, you know, put his body on the line every single play. Like, there was some times where I'm like, oh my goodness, like, how can a guy take so many hits and just pop right up and then run for a 60-yard touchdown? So, you know, when I saw that, you know, I wasn't going to complain about, you know, if I wasn't getting the targets that I would have liked. And, you know, we were at the point where, you know, I wanted to win games, and I wanted to, you know, if I had to block 50 times that game, I was, you know, I was going to do it. Because you look in there and you see Troy putting his head down on and dragging guys for, you know, carry after carry. And I'm like, oh, geez, I guess I got to go out there and shuffle my feet and pretend to be hitting someone too. So, but yeah, you know, and I'm not going to say it wasn't, at times it wasn't frustrating, but, you know, I kind of wanted to, you know, be a good example to not only to the receivers in my room and stuff, but also just to the team.
So how did you kind of like maybe endear yourself to like a new coach, a new offensive coordinator, or maybe even like a new QB? Because there was quite a few quarterbacks during your 4 years there.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you know, it was interesting with, you know, the amount of, I mean, you don't really realize it because I guess you do, but a lot of our offensive coordinators were hired internally, except, who was it?
Bob Cole, I believe.
Bob Cole, that's right. yeah, that's right. so, you know, I was rooting for guys like Armstrong, too, when he first got his offensive coordinator and stuff. And, you know, and of course, Matt, when he got moved up, I think, to be offensive coordinator, like, I just wanted to, you know, I'm sure he was nervous because, you know, going from, you know, being a position coach to calling plays, and there's a lot riding on that and stuff. And it was only a good opportunity for him. But Matt's one of those guys where it's like everyone just wanted to perform for him to, you know, so he could, I guess, look good, you know, because people love Matt. And we wanted to not only, you know, do well for as a team, but for him too, because, I mean, he's calling plays and he's kind of in a new position and role. But yeah, you know, it was interesting having multiple offensive coordinators, but I think Coach Choate did a good job of like allowing us to understand that, you know, we're going to be a run first team. We're going to do this. We're going to play action. We're going to take our shots on the field. But yeah, it was different, especially having, and obviously the quarterback situation was definitely unique. Say the least.
Yeah, the Cats have had two of the more unique quarterbacks that I've ever seen at any college level in the last 4 years. We had Chris Murray and Troy Anderson, two guys who could get it done with their feet and maybe not so much with their arm, we'll just say. I'm curious, who did you, just out of the two, who was more electric to you? They're both crazy to watch run the ball, but I'm just kind of curious your opinion.
More electric? Man, that's a great question. Chris had some, I mean, Chris has that flip in the end zone against the Grizz. I mean, that's, talk about being electric.
Yeah.
And then I just think Troy's just like, I don't know how MSU was able to get him to come. I mean, I think I understand because Troy's from Montana and he loves it and stuff. And he wanted to be a Bobcat, but man, it just like, I don't know if Troy's electric because Troy's just like, so good. It's like, okay, that makes sense. He's gonna break four tackles and score a 60-yard touchdown. But Chris, it was like he was just a freshman. We're like, oh my goodness. Like, I think it was Sac State when he had like three huge rushing touchdowns for like 50 plus yards. But yeah, Troy's electric too. But I think Chris was just how he came onto the scene and stuff was, you know, was super cool.
It seems to me a little bit like Chris, especially his first year, didn't really have too good idea what he was doing. Would you say that was accurate? Just kind of got out there and like, just kind of winged it half the time.
Yeah, maybe that was, you know, maybe that was the best thing.
Part of his magic. Like, part of his magic.
Yeah, just don't think. Just go play. And he sure made some crazy plays.
Well, Kevin, we don't have too many more questions before we get into the buy or sell. So we're going to move into kind of the now version of Montana State. So this coming year, like, who do you see as emerging leaders on the team? Maybe who is the next Kevin Cassis on the Montana State Bobcats?
Let me think. I know a guy like Lewis Kidd. He's going to play, a pretty big leadership role. You can kind of start to tell because, the relationships that you can see those guys start to create and develop, there's not a single guy on that team who doesn't, like or doesn't respect, Lewis Kidd and stuff. He's, probably the nicest guy, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. So he's definitely a guy who's going to take a big leadership role. And I think Tucker Rovick's going to take the next step as a leader. He's proven himself. I probably shouldn't say this, but we'd see that they've been practicing and stuff, and I still kind of have access to their film. So I was watching him throw and whatever. So he looks good. I mean, he's one of those guys, I think he's going to be a leader. And yeah, I think another guy who just, if we want to say, I don't know, I'm not so special. I'm not going to say someone's Kevin Castle. I mean, I'm nothing too crazy, but just a guy who I would strive to be more like is a guy like Coy Steele. Dude, he's just one of the hardest working kids. And I think he's going to have a huge season if there's a season even this year. So we'll see. But he's going to be a guy who, regardless if he wants to be a vocal leader and whatnot, and he's the guy that guys are going to look to because he's as tough as nails and just a super good dude.
Yeah, he got crunched pretty bad in the what game was that?
Northern Arizona? That's right.
He got sandwiched and somehow that kept the ball and scored a touchdown.
That was one of the, honestly, that's just a definition of Coy. Just to take, I don't think I could take that hit. I would have fell down for sure. Thank goodness that wasn't me. I didn't want to take that hit.
So just keeping on this train of thought real quick here, who is the next, maybe the wide receiver that Bobcat fans can kind of look to maybe be the next guy? Cause obviously you're graduating, Travis Johnson's graduating. So a lot of the targets are gone. A lot of the receiving yards are gone.
Yeah. You know, that's going to be interesting. I think definitely guys are going to have to emerge and stuff. And, a guy like Coy who has experience, he's definitely going to be an asset on that offense. But, a guy like Lance McCutcheon who has all the ability in the world and stuff. And, we even saw that in the playoffs when he's making a crazy one-handed touchdown catch. And I think he had another one that game too. So he's going to be big. And then I think a guy to definitely look for is, Jaden Smith. I think he's going to definitely be rewriting the record books here pretty soon. He's just, for how big he is and how he moves and stuff, he's going to be special. And there's a bunch of guys. I feel bad for a guy like Willie Patterson, who's had two collarbones and injuries. And he's so, talk about a guy who's electric. He's going to be, if they're able to get him in space and do the right things with him, he's going to be a great player as well. But there's a lot of potential in that room, and I think there's definitely some guys in that room who can step up and who can be big targets for that offense.
Well, as long as they keep the humility that you're displaying right here, where you said you can continue to block when called upon and be a team guy, that would be important. So We'll keep moving on, but I guess one of the last questions I have for you before we get into our buyer sale is what do you think you gained from your time playing at MSU, and maybe how do you think that's going to help you as you move forward in your professional career?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think you realize that, for myself during that time, I guess how organized you have to be, how you have to be with your time and stuff, and it's just kind of crazy now, getting off of that routine and schedule. Now I'm I feel weird. I'm like, dang, is there somewhere I need to go? Do I need to do something? Do I need to is there a workout I'm missing or whatever? But it was a good experience to not only, play football and go to a, great school and stuff, but just kind of how organizing the scheduling and stuff. And you always had to, be thinking two steps ahead with okay, you got to do this, you got to go work out, you got to go watch film. So I think just being able to manage your time and stuff, I think that's, hopefully that's something that pays dividends going forward.
Do you have any plans to kind of stay connected to MSU?
Yeah, I hope I can get up to a few games. Maybe, I mean, I don't know if you guys should go to any games with me because they're going to, you guys don't seem to be good luck charms.
Well, we're tentatively scheduled to go to the Idaho game. So if it happens, if fans are allowed, whatever, but tentatively we'll be at one.
Okay. Well, maybe they'll have one loss in them this year. So
yeah,
that'll be all right.
We can still get the number two seed with one loss.
Yeah, exactly. We'll still be going to NDSU, but it's all good.
Yep. We'll be the reason we end up in Fargo. Just us.
Oh, I'm kidding. Like, but yeah, I hope I can get up to a few games. Honestly, I miss it up there. I eventually would love to, you know, get back up there at some point. Hopefully, you know, like later in my life, I can be able to spend more time up there because, gosh, there's some cool things to do up there. And like, you know, I was able to go on some hikes and fly fish and stuff, but I didn't get to do that as much as I would have liked to. So it'll be cool to be able to go up there and do some of the things that, you know, maybe I wasn't able to or had the time to do when I was playing.
So if Coach Choke called you up today and said, "Hey man, I got a grad position open for you. We could use you back on the staff." What would you say to him?
Yeah, that would be very, very tempting. And there've been, it's actually funny you say that. There was actually a couple opportunities, not at MSU, but just from like obviously prior coaches that I've interacted with. And it's tough. A part of me would love to be able to, you know, eventually be a coach and whatnot and do that. But there's a part of me that, you know, wants to just pursue other things and see, you know, experience other things other than football. But yeah, if those opportunities come up, it'd be really tough to say no.
Yeah. Well, good job, Kevin. You've navigated all the tough questions we have, but now we get to play the buy or sell. So if you don't know, buy or sell is just a quick game we play at the very end. And all you got to do is just give us a buy or sell on the statement that we're going to ask you. And then maybe just your explanation thereafter. Sound good?
Okay, gotcha. Sounds good.
All right. Number one, buy or sell, Kevin. Night games over day games.
I think I'll buy that. I think just that playoff game that we had, I was like the craziest thing. After the game was over and we won, it was like, it almost felt like it was like a concert out there. There's so many people that came out on the field and it was just so crazy. And I think guys would probably agree the night games are something special.
Can't argue that.
The Gold Rush game at night is always one of my favorites to watch for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Day games are cool though too. You get a little more time at night, you know, especially after a win. It's always, that's always pretty fun.
Well, the night game is the other fans.
Catch my drift, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The night game is maybe fans have been going a little harder, a little bit longer than they would if there's a noon kickoff.
Yeah. I could see that.
Energy
that
might be a little bit different in the crowd.
Yeah. That's another thing too. I want to tailgate at a Bobcat game. I never got I never had a chance to. So I'm kind of looking forward to that.
There's a goal for you.
You just let us know and when you're going and we'll go and then we'll introduce you to everybody. How about that?
Let's do that. Let's plan on that.
All right. Number two, buy or sell, slot receiver over outside.
I think I have to buy that just because, you know, I'm the... You know, I'm your typical short, unathletic, wide receiver who, you know, you got to be a slot guy. That's exactly, you know. But, no, I don't know how somehow I played a little outside too, but I think I tend to, you know, like playing the slot a little more.
Okay. All right. Just quick question on that. Is there any kind of duties that you liked in the slot receiver more than playing on the outside?
I guess just like the game's kind of different from when you're playing inside. You get better matchups on, like, you're going against a linebacker, basically, if you're running routes and stuff. And I guess the downside of that is you got to block a linebacker, too. So maybe I have to rethink that, because I'm not an overly physical wide receiver. So blocking big linebackers always isn't the funnest thing to do. Okay. Especially if it's like Troy or someone that wasn't fun at practice.
Oh, man. Right on. Good point. Okay, well, moving on. Number three. This one has nothing to do with football, but it's something that's near and dear in my heart right now. Buy or sell smoothies for breakfast.
Yeah, I'd buy that. I'm a big smoothie guy. I got the Nutribullet and stuff, so I'll whip up a couple of breakfast smoothies.
Nice. Do you have a go-to recipe?
Here's a funny thing. When I make a smoothie, I literally get all the fruit, whatever I can find is put in there. And I live with, now being back home with my younger sister and my older sister. And they're so particular in what goes into a smoothie. It's like we're at Jamba. We joke around. We think our house is like Jamba Juice because there's always blenders going off and stuff. So they're very particular about what goes into their smoothies. I kind of, you know, there's some spinach. Unfortunately, you know, I'll throw some of that in, and some some frozen fruit that'll go in there. But yeah, they're very particular.
So my recipe is one banana, typically some sort of frozen fruit. Right now it's been blueberries, but then I go spinach, a scoop of peanut butter and honey, and then almond milk. And so that's my go-to. It's been like every day for pretty much the quarantine.
We're twins. Yeah. I think the peanut butter is key. It kind of gets rid of all that, you know, all the spinach taste.
You got to cover that spinach taste up.
No kidding.
All right. Well, I got just a few here, a little bit more football related ish. Buy or sell, at one point during your MSU career, you thought to yourself, maybe I should just be the quarterback. You can also, Bethany Cordell invented the layaway where you basically don't have to answer.
You know, I think I've always, you know, I think I'm just, I guess I'll buy that. I think some guys might agree with me too. I think I could have got back down or center. I mean, shoot, I probably, I don't know. Maybe I could have played football quarterback in college, but it wasn't in high school. It wasn't easy getting snaps when you got a Notre Dame quarterback ahead of you. So I quickly made the transition to receiver. But hey, you know, I'll buy it. I'll have a little confidence.
Would you have shot the bow and arrow after every touchdown pass?
Yeah, I probably would have done that. I don't know. I don't have no clue why I did that. It was just like, I probably saw someone.
Wasn't there a baseball player who was doing it? A pitcher, pretty popular a few years ago, who was doing that a lot?
Oh, yeah. Probably. Yeah, probably.
CC Sabathia was who it was?
Yeah, I think so.
I think there was a, I can't remember. I think I saw someone in the NFL. I thought it was so cool. So I was like, if I throw a touchdown pass, I'm going to do that.
You could have done it your junior year. I would have put you in there over Troy. I think, you know, Troy is special, no doubt, but you just had the moxie. You could have did it. I mean, and you probably had some of the best accuracy on the whole team. So, I mean, our passing game would have been more prolific, no doubt.
The triple option with you and Troy as your pitch guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been pretty cool. I mean, definitely the running capability compared to Troy, it wouldn't have been there. But hey, I could have handed off to him. I wouldn't have mind. Would have saved me from getting some headaches from blocking and stuff. But I would have been happy handing it to Troy.
Yeah.
Okay. One last question for you. Kind of a little bit building off, I guess, the bow and arrow thing. You deserved the flag for taunting against Simo for flexing in the end zone. Fire cell.
I'm gonna have to sell that because the punt. You know, I think so. Choke's thing is if you get a personal foul. I mean, luckily they were on my side too. They thought it was lame, but still, there's always a punishment for getting a personal foul. I think we had to do like a stupid amount of push-ups or something like that, or do some extra sprints or something. Oh, no, that's what it was. We had a roll. So we had to basically roll from one sideline to the other. Yes. So there, I got a photo out of that. That's all that matters, I guess. There's a picture of it. So I guess it was worth, you know, having to roll a couple hundred yards.
That was I think you just caught a big classic over the shoulder catch, and you got up, did some celebrating, walked in the end zone, flexing a little too hard, maybe. What did the ref say to you anyway? What did he come up and just say?
Yeah, I thought he was just kind of giving me a warning, but then the laundry got thrown on the field, and I was like, oh shoot, they're not gonna be happy about this.
Were you saying anything or just nothing? Just flexing.
I think I was I flexed, and I think I was just like, that was a night game, right? So it was,
yeah.
Just the yellow and everything. I was like, oh my, I think I was just so excited.
Sorry.
I did way too many curls and tricep extensions that I had to, you know, during my career. So I had to, you know, I had to do something.
Were you a trash talker?
You know, funny thing is, I wasn't. I was like, I wanted to try to be, I just couldn't. I was just like, I never had good comebacks. I always just like catch the ball, get to the sideline. Like, okay, what's the next play? But there's guys who, oh my goodness, like, they're so good at it. I just like, I don't get it. I just wasn't clever or creative enough to think of stuff what to say.
You're just like, cat, good one. It's like, laugh.
Yeah, exactly. To you,
you're like, ah, nice.
Yeah, no kidding.
Hey, 22, your shoes untied. Yeah. That's always a classic line right there.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, well, thanks for coming on, Kevin. It's been a lot of fun kind of reminiscing and hearing about your days at MSU.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys. This was cool.
Well, we always end these things with the Go Cats. I'd love to get a Go Cats from you.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Go Cats.
All right, I got places to be.